from our district in Butte.
That's a bizarre noise.
And Amanda Curtis and I and a couple friends from Butte and friends from Missoula got together and formed the Butte America Foundation. And it was our intention to start the radio station, but Amanda always insisted that we allow for other projects in the nonprofit as well. And that's the shirt I'm wearing. The BAMF is the Butte America Foundation, or Badass Motherfuckers, as Amanda wanted to call it. And we thought that would be better than Butte America Radio Foundation, because that would be BARF. So,
BARF.
Yeah. So we founded the Butte America Foundation in 2013. Our mission is to provide information and tools to uphold the tenets of social justice. Mm-hmm. One of those tools is the radio station. So there's kind of a little bit of distinction between the mission of the foundation and the mission of the radio station. Mission of the foundation, like I say, is to provide information and tools, and then the mission of the radio station is about access. So that's really the only thing we try to do at KBMF, first and foremost, is get people on the air that want to be on the air. I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican or whatever the fuck. I don't care about their politics or what music they play. If they want to play obscure EDM from Germany or they want to play AC/DC's Back in Black, I don't care. That just is about access to the station. So that's our main priority. What? I don't know what the hell's going on. Ah, fuck it. All right. Thank you for trying. So when we were first starting out, I just wanted to make a brief note. I appreciate your attention. I'm telling my story here. Everyone has, I'm sure, an exciting story about building a station. And ours is, I don't want to present it as though ours was built without conflict. Mm. Because, no board is perfect. And we kind of experienced that early on when one of our volunteers, who's now a paid employee of the station, wrote an editorial in a local arts magazine about how this radio station is going to be a great thing for Butte because commercial radio has homogenized the dial across the country. And he basically said commercial radio is bullshit and this is the antidote to it. Well, the first thing that did was piss off all the people in town that work at the commercial radio stations.
That's right.
So that's why I said yesterday in the talk, and I would say again, never, especially on the air, never criticize your commercial radio colleagues. Yes, you do things differently. In a bar, we'll say things like that commercializing the airwaves is almost a criminal misuse of the technology, but I would never go on the air and say that. So I would advise you to be careful. It can create unnecessary conflict. And just keep in mind that other people who are broadcasting are on the radio too. They're your colleagues. So so we learned that the hard way early on, and it resulted in someone leaving our board, which was unfortunate because she's a prominent name in Butte. And in Butte, it's very important that you're from Butte. And I'm not from there. And the first thing people ask you is, you from Butte? You a Butte guy? And I'm not a fucking Butte guy. So that, is a mark against you. So we lost someone who was from Butte, and that was damaging. So anyway, it was just because we, Dark, our one of our employees was criticizing commercial radio, so I'd really advise against that. But I want to talk a little bit about the formation of our station and how we drummed up money to build the thing. We all knew that our group, the Butte America Foundation, we had formed. We got our 501c3 status, which took about 8 months. And then we knew that we needed about $10,000 to buy the equipment. So, you need some kind of mixing board, and you need to plug that into a transmitter, and then that needs to plug into an antenna that's mounted to a mast. That's basically the setup of a station. And so we figured that would cost about 10 G's. So we did this campaign called 100 for 100. So if 100 people donated $100, then we were going to get on the air. And I think really simple messaging like that is what made it possible for us in the beginning. And then it was just a ton of hard work. If the video comes back, I'll show you a short video of the building that we reside in. It's in a lot of ways similar to these buildings around us here in Albany, in that it's three stories, it's brick, masonry construction with steel. It's the Carpenters Union Hall, built in 1906, which is the oldest operating labor temple in the state of Montana. And in order to put our antenna up, see, we have a non-penetrating roof mount, which is basically just a mast that's weighted down on the roof, and then it has an 18-foot pole, and we have a single bay antenna attached to it. So to weigh it down, you have to have sandbags and cinder blocks, and so we hauled that shit up the fire escape in backpacks, and the fire escape is coming out of the brick, and it's like, oh, God, I'll never go on the fire escape again unless I'm escaping from a fire. So that's how we built the thing, and it was a lot of work, but it was so rewarding to lift the tower, and the day we went to actually raise it, there was a lightning storm coming, and we could see
it.
I remember my friend Patrick, I was like, maybe we should wait till tomorrow. He goes, fuck it, let's do it. We put it up, so it was really rewarding, you know. Like I say, I bet, you know, most of us in this room have had that. You were talking about it yesterday at the round table, how blissful that moment is when you get it on the air. So then what I did is, so the initial recruitment, I know we're at different stages, the stations are, some people have been on the air for years and have many volunteers, and others are just now getting going. And so our station was founded, like I said, on the principle of access. So the first thing I did was recruit everyone I could, there it is, that had former radio experience. I invited all the people that I had met in the 2 years I was living in Butte before we were on the air and said, you know, okay, you have former radio experience. In a way, we were lucky. Our college station in Butte at Montana Tech kicked all the non-students off the air. It sounds like it was a similar thing that happened in Rochester. College stations are really shooting themselves in the foot with that. But
I guess, was it NPR?
No, they weren't.
Was it NPR now?
No. It's just a 400-watt station, but they've been on the air since early 70s, and I don't know why they did that. Anyway, it meant that a lot of volunteers came to us. So I recruited all those people with volunteer experience. And the way that our DJ trainings work, I'll go through in this section here. I'll just go through it now. I put out a call for DJ trainings. I do it the third Tuesday of every month at 7 p.m. Everybody knows that that's the time that it's going to occur. And it's good to, I think, set schedules for an entire year and then stick to it so that people know, oh, yeah, it's the third Tuesday coming up. My buddy was saying he wants to get on the air, so you should go to this training. Basically, what I do is I go through, I've got it boiled down to like a 60-minute spiel where I go through our manual and I explain the law and I explain the difference between obscene and indecent. I talk about safe harbor hours. I talk about qualitative, quantitative, calls to action, all the prohibited forms of language. And then I lay out all of our station policies. And like I say, it takes me about an hour to run through it all. I like to talk. I like to, you know, run through shit. Then what I have people do is take a brief test. No one's ever failed the test, kind of a no-brainer test. And then they sign what's called a certification sheet, where they say, I've read the rules and regulations. I've taken this training. I understand that if I break the rules, I may lose my privilege to be on the air at KVMF with or without cause. So everyone has signed this document. And if and when some issue arises years down the road with that person, then I always have this document on hand that shows, okay, well, you don't have the privilege to be on the air anymore. It's important to provide access, but it's also important to protect your resource. And again, that 100 for 100, at least 100 people in the beginning had donated to us. So to all those people, I feel beholden to protect the resource and keep the station on the air, to keep us from getting sued or issued a forfeiture from the FCC. So I'm kind of like a mama bear. If someone wants to fuck with my kid, I'm going to just maul them. So anyway, that's the way, to give you a bear metaphor, you know, from Montana, I guess.
Montana.
Right.
It's a grizzly situation.
It is bear, yes. Thank you so much. I wanted to show you a little bit here, real quick, the building that we reside in, and this kind of ties into my presentation yesterday. Grant proposals. I think a grant proposal is often really enhanced by the addition of a video. So I made this video for the BNSF Railway Foundation. Part of what we do at our station, too, is we fundraise to renovate the building so that we can save money on rent. And, you know, it's a lot easier to write a grant than it is to pay $450 a month. So sometimes. So this is the, this will give you an idea, too, of what's going on in the building. Show you where this, in this video, you'll see the room in which I hope to host the GRC in 2020. I'd love to bring it to Butte, but we got a lot of work to do before we can.
The Butte America Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
Okay, here we go.
That's been working in the community of Butte, Montana for the past 4 years. Our home is the Carpenters Union Hall, a historic labor temple on the National Register of Historic Places, a stunning example of turn-of-the-century carpentry and masonry that is home to our flagship project, a low-power FM community radio station called KBNF 102.5 FM. The BNSF Railway Foundation generously supported our radio station with a grant of $2,500 in 2016. This year, we're taking on another big project, the historic old hall we call home.
It's pretty fucked up right now.
In fact, we've been working on the Carpenters Hall for the past 4 years, with an annual day of action to clean and restore the building. It's done through a partnership with the trustees of the building, who have generously afforded us space for our operations. Our most recent day of action removed water-damaged plaster from the second-floor ballroom, a majestic and stately room that's seen decades of neglect due to the decline of the mining industry in this once bustling town in the mountains. We then cut channels in the ceiling of the ballroom so we could have new wiring installed. Soon we'll be able to flip the lights on in the old ballroom on the second floor for the first time in nearly 40 years. This $7,000 electrical job is only the beginning, and that's where the BNSF Railway Foundation comes in.
We need your railroad money, now.
This year we're asking you to help us with the next phase of electrical and plumbing work in the Carpenter's Hall. This historic building, once a center point for the Butte community, will have new life with the hard work and dedication of the Butte America Foundation and its volunteers. The Foundation's proven itself a responsible steward of grant monies from BNSF and a number of other charitable organizations, including the Staples Foundation, the local city-county government, and numerous regional organizations like the Jerry Metcalf Foundation, Glacier Bank, and hundreds of members and supporters of KBMF and our nonprofit work. We hope you'll review this application favorably and help us on this journey to bring back the hall.
By cutting a check. So
is that part of a grant that you said?
That was part of a grant, yeah. And I wanted to show, basically to just show you the building, but also kind of demonstrate that, you know, a short little video with a grant, I think, goes a long way.
How much was that? Excuse me, quick announcement here.
Yes.
We have a sign-up sheet, and everyone can sign it so that we know who was in this workshop.
Okay.
Much appreciated.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
How long is that thing we just watched?
2 minutes?
2 minutes? Okay.
Yeah. So that's the building we're in. I wanted to talk a little bit about the day-to-day stuff at the station, what I hope would be of most use to people here that are curious about running a station. There's so many different models to do it, you know, not just the NPR, college, or LPFM distinctions, but even within those, there are different ways to do it. So, like I said, I went over the training process, what I do, the manual. After people go through that training and they take the test and sign the certification sheet, then I sign them up for the first of three, what we call buddy sessions. So we have buddy session checklists for each of these. So in the first one, the new DJ observes a two-hour shift with a veteran DJ, and there's a whole checklist of stuff that the veteran is supposed to show them. You got to show them where the EAS is. These are the CD players. This is how you fast forward. This is how you change songs. Show them the mixing board, the headphone volume control, all the very basics. Every button in the studio, every DJ should know every button, because if something is wrong, I like people to be able to troubleshoot it to some extent themselves. So first buddy session, they observe. The second buddy session, they observe the first hour, and then they run the board the second hour under instruction. The third buddy session, they run the entire show, and the veteran DJ watches them and assists when necessary. And then they, at that time, check off at the end. Yes, they're ready to go alone, or no, they're not. And if not, we do another session. So I've done up to nine with some people, because computer literacy is really a problem in our town. A lot of older folks are on our station, and not all of them went to school, and the public library has very limited resources, so we've done a lot of just computer literacy with people. And what I mean by that is, like, when they're DJing and I say, okay, this song's about to end, so why don't you open a tab and go to YouTube, and they're like, open a what? Like, oh fuck, you know. So I push CDs a lot, you know, for new DJs. CDs really are a great way to DJ. Some people might think it's an outdated medium, but for broadcasts, I really prefer CDs as the source. So anyway, that's the training process. It can be as long or as short as necessary. The shortest it's going to be, though, is three sessions. So the other approach that I have to management is, and this is really taxing, but I think ultimately very necessary, is this day-to-day involvement with the DJ's lives. We become friends. If I'm going to leave someone alone and entrust them with the station that we built, I got to know them to some extent.
Yeah.
So I'll help them move. They help me move. People have given me food when we couldn't pay the general manager position. We become close. I mean, it's like a family. We kind of refer to it as a cult, because we all wear the same hoodies and the hats, and we're walking around town, and we're like a cult. So I think that's kind of important. I don't want to be in the Heaven's Gate or whatever, but KBMF cult's pretty cool, a lot of perks. So this guy, to kind of serve as the primary example of that, this guy, Gerald Larson, showed up one day. Big, huge, fat, smelly, homeless guy, and had a big backpack, and he was just absolutely incredible musical encyclopedia. He had worked at this record store of Bozeman for years and years, and just fell on hard times, and his truck broke down, and it was repossessed, or whatever, the towing company basically stole it, and he was just living on the street in Butte, and winter was coming. And so There's these stories of when our station first started and Gerald was just sprawled out on the floor while people were DJing, and you have this huge guy asleep there, and anyway, he would steal liquor from parties that we had, and it was just fucking crazy. But I love Gerald, and we would go upstairs and smoke spliffs and stuff, and he was really cool. And anyway, I helped him get into some social services. We have a program in Butte called Rapid Rehousing. And so, you know, I drove him to his appointments, and we got his Social Security card back, and we got him into a house, and then he dealt with depression, and he ended up not taking his thyroid medication for about 2 months, and then he just fucking died. So it was really a shame, but we have these, I didn't bring any, but this sticker on my computer, he used to draw stuff all the time, and so, you know, we kind of memorialized Gerald, and we had a funeral service in that dusty ballroom upstairs. And so that, you know, that's an example of something where it's like, oftentimes community radio is more social work than it is radio, you know, so I think that's an important aspect of management, you know, especially with federal government cutting more and more programs, and the Montana state government has cut so much from the Department of Health and Human Services. Institutions to actually help these people are just few and far between, and they're understaffed, and so it's, I feel, kind of our responsibility as nonprofit institutions to step in where we can and assist these people. So, you know, I would advise that, of course, you have to also put some boundaries in place because you can't help everybody all the time. So anyway, but that is an aspect of station management that I'm really cognizant of. So while DJs are in the station, I have everybody do a shift report at the end of the shift. There's just a binder and a paper thing that says there's three per page, front and back, and it says, how was it today? And I don't care what they write on there, I just have to write something because I like having a written record of who was controlling the apparatus at every possible shift. So, you know, 8 to 10 a.m., there's a person, and then there's someone 10 to noon, noon to 2, 2 to 4. Every 2 hours, it's a new DJ, and all of these shift reports. And that's where I find out if equipment is acting up, if a CD player is on the fritz, something like that. Shift reports are really handy. We also do an underwriting log. So anytime I have the underwriters on a schedule, everything's pre-recorded. We don't do live reads of the underwriters. And that way we can avoid any kind of qualitative language or calls to action. So anytime someone plays an underwriter, they then log it, the date, the time, and they initial it, what underwriter they played.
Quick question. Is that paper or you got it?
It's all on paper.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, I do paper logs. I like paper. You know, people don't forget to do it if it's paper, I find. So, and then if businesses are curious, hey, are you playing my underwriting mentions? I have the log. And I can say, yep, we played it at 10:20 and we played it again at 6:50. You know? So the log's really helpful. I wanted to kind of shift and talk about new music. You know, access is a great thing. You say you build a station, you open it up to everybody, you develop all these personal relationships. I love music, they love music, we like different kinds of music, the program schedule's full, we're rolling, the station's on the air, this is a great thing. Now, how do we improve the quality of the music? One thing I would really advise against is prohibiting songs that are popular. Like a no stairway policy, I think that's bullshit. So don't do that. That's my advice. But if someone's playing too much AC/DC and some new record comes out that is kind of similar to AC/DC, I might recommend that to them in maybe a subtle way or not so subtle way. And I typically will do that through our DJ socials that we have monthly where we all get together. That's the last Tuesday of every month at 7 p.m.
And where do you get together? Your location?
At the Carpenter's Hall, yep, on the first floor.
I know it's college music journal, CMJ, but you can also report as a non-college.
Right, student. That's actually the next thing I'm getting into. So CMJ is basically dead, but yeah, but CMJ has gone through a lot of turmoil this year, and we don't report to them anymore because CMJ, College Music Journal, there's this thing, it's kind of like the college music cycle of life, I call it, where a band makes a record, they send it to these promotions companies, like some names of promotions companies are Distiller, Cosign, Pirate, Vitriol, there's a bunch of them. And those promoters send it to hundreds of stations. And then those stations play that music, and then you keep track of what you're playing through a variety of ways. We use Spinitron, spinitron.com, it's a great service. And then you can track how many of the new releases are getting played on your station and develop a top 30 chart. That's like the top 30 most popular new releases on your station. And then back in the day, we'd submit that chart to the College Music Journal. And then those same promoters that sent us it initially would see, okay, they're playing the stuff that I'm sending them, and so they keep sending in new music. And this is how you get hundreds of CDs sent to you, and you have an influx of new music all the time. That really requires a staff member to manage it. We have a music director, it's a ton of work to go through all the music. There's so much great shit coming out all the time, and a lot of really horrible stuff. Mm-hmm. And so College Music Journal costs $300 a year, and their website was declining, and they were becoming less and less responsive. And so we basically just said, fuck you, CMJ, we're not using it anymore. There's this new thing now called NACC, which is North American College and Community Charts. And NACC is kind of the replacement for CMJ, and I really like these people. They've been really great, and they've built this just in the past, I don't know, 6 months. And they're very responsive. But basically what we do, you can see the ad schedule. Each week when new records come out, this is the ad schedule. They're hoping that you will add these records, 5 to 10 of these records. And an ad is how things like new Barnes Courtney debuts at number one. Whoa. That's I don't know who Barnes, the Courtney Barnett knockoff or something, but so that's how they determine how something is debuting at number three or whatever is how you add them. And so each week we enter 5 to 10 records in our ads, and then we do a chart, and you can see here's the 200. This is the top 200 new releases. This is basically the independent flip side of the Billboard Top 40. And so when you submit these charts, the promotions companies are more inclined to start sending you stuff. The problem we run into is that not a lot of our DJs are especially inclined to go seek out new music. No one has fucking time for that because they work and they have kids, and so they're not going to go seek it out. So we have to bring it to them. And so we've done some of that on CD, but I don't want to be burning CDs and cutting up album art all the time and trying to fucking write grants and stuff. So we made this website, and it's just buttamericaradio.org/music. And so if you click on the /music, you come to this page, Subsonic. So it's user-based. We can create users. You log in. Subsonic is free. It's really, or I guess the premium version is $1 per month. So this is how we do it. All the new music that comes in, 95% of it nowadays anyway, is digital downloads. They're not mailing a ton of CDs. Some places still do, but and I like physicals anyway. That's a whole debate. But what we're looking at here, I'm going to go to the index. Any music that we receive, we just upload it all to our music server, which we paid for with a grant. And this is the index, and you can scroll down. And these are all the artists that are on Subsonic. Right now, we're up to, I'm constantly uploading stuff, but we got 33,000 songs by 1,900 artists. So it's a fair amount. And this is the way we do it. The playlist right here. Each week, the top ads, the top new releases for that week, we just make a playlist in Subsonic. So, like from 2 weeks ago, DJs could come in and go, Stromfart by Eisbrecher. This is like some new German metal. Fastest Irgos.
Oh, yeah.
So, if someone likes Drowning Pool and they're playing fucking Drowning Pool on the air for the umpteenth time, I go, hey man, have you heard of Eisbrecher? Anyway, so that, oh god, here we go again. That's fine though. Okay, sounds good.
You skipped over for a second. You said you had a monthly meeting at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Is this what you're talking about? This?
Well, no, the DJ socials are where we all just get together and eat food, and we have it's basically a cult meeting.
Okay, but I mean, are you dealing with this music stuff at that meeting?
I have been starting to demo.
Just in general?
I've been demoing Subsonic.
Okay, that was just a social then. Okay.
Yeah, so okay. We call it a social. I kind of treat it like a meeting because I'm a dictator.
You said you upload everything that you bring in.
Yeah.
You vet it for airplay?
Nope, we tell the DJs you have to review.
The DJs have to do that?
You got to review your content, yeah. So we just upload everything to Subsonic. Now this kind of ties into a topic that I haven't really heard mentioned much at the GRC this year that I came here really wanting to discuss, and that's broadcasting YouTube videos and Spotify. So I know some stations prohibit it, other stations don't. We don't prohibit it yet. And so what I want to do, what I told our DJs, this Subsonic thing is very new, it's a very new tool for us, and so I basically told them you got 2 years to wean yourself off of YouTube, because if you read the YouTube user agreement, you shouldn't be broadcasting from YouTube. And same thing with Spotify. They're just too convenient, and there's a vast library. It's incredible what you can find on YouTube. And I think that's kind of the secret weapon of a lot of LPFMs, is they can play all these obscure, blues from 1940s and stuff, because we can find all this shit on YouTube. But we really, from my reading of it, we shouldn't be playing stuff from YouTube. And you open yourself up to liability, and again, that's my job, first and foremost, is to protect the resource, protect the asset of the station. So Subsonic will be a replacement for that kind of stuff, those streaming services. We have the rights to promote the music on the air that we put on Subsonic, and it's for promotional purposes only. And it's user-based. You have to log in, and I can track who's doing what and all that. So Subsonic will be the way we go in a couple of years. I don't know of any cases where the FCC or anybody else has fined a station or found some copyright violation for using YouTube or Spotify. I can't find any cases on it. I don't want to be the first case.
Wouldn't they have to prove, though, that you didn't have the original record?
I don't know.
You'd be confessing that you used YouTube, but
yeah.
How would they know you didn't have the record or whatever?
I don't know.
Right?
I don't know.
I'm
yeah.
Just saying. So you only put the music that's been sent to you by promoters on Subsonic, or do you sometimes put other things in?
I put my own library on there. I encourage DJs to upload their library to it. So it's just a repository for promotional purposes.
And then Subsonic, they have a server that holds all of that.
It all goes on our server, and then Subsonic is just a web app we use for people to access our server.
So you had to create a server.
Yep, we did that through a grant. We wrote a grant for the server.
And yes. So your library isn't interlinked with someone else's library. It's just BAM's library.
Right, yep, it's just for KVMF and KVMF users. Although, and I'll talk about it here in a little bit, we are attempting to form a regional network, and this is one of the features I'd like to offer members of that network, is access to Subsonic. So it's a limited library at this point, but I hope before my tenure's up we could have a million songs on Subsonic. So I talked about DJ Socials. We also have a number of committees. I talked about the approach to the content. I don't restrict content. If it's legal to be broadcast, it can be on the air at KVMF. So we did have a guy who wanted to do a talk program, news he called it, about how immigrants are disease-ridden criminals and so on. And while that would be lawful, I guess, to put on the air, I called it hate speech, and I said you can't do this program. So I'm fine if people have a dissenting political view from our board of directors or from anybody else involved with the station or even myself, but it needs to be civil discourse and intelligent discourse. And so that subjectivity is kind of a fine line. You don't want to restrict speech more than you should, but anyway.
There's no committee. You're the top. You're the dictator at the top.
Yeah, dictator. Yep. So the board of directors is kind of the purse strings, and then I make the management decisions for the radio station. And that distinction is something we put in place early on, and I would really advise a similar structure at your station. Get a manager that you trust, and then leave the board of directors to support them, not to micromanage every little decision they try to make. Let the person run the station. That's my advice. But I wanted to talk a little bit about our news team, which is another new thing for us. Standing Rock, we went out to Standing Rock, and our news team investigators took this hilarious RV out there that barely made it, and that we borrowed from a guy, and we brought a generator. And I have some experience with making documentaries, and I'm fairly proficient with Adobe Audition, which is a really great software to use for audio production. Audacity is acceptable, but Audition really is worth the investment. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in doing audio production at your station or things like that, we've developed a manual, a training manual, but there are all kinds of resources online. I'd be happy to share those documents about how to get going with Audition. And we went to...
Yep. Sorry, just want to say this. Yeah. College radio programs, they're using this program and putting it on kids, which is Reaper.
Yep, okay.
There's also Hindenburg. But Reaper seems to be the one that's very affordable.
Okay.
Is that Audition platform or pricey?
Yeah, Audition.
Because
it's a cloud, too, that you have to pay monthly.
Yep, it is nowadays.
But Audition, Audacity.
Audacity is free. Yeah, and
buggy.
It is.
It's buggy.
But you can do stuff with it, so yeah. I don't know if we're going to get that back.
Is it multi-platform or is it...
Yeah, it can be installed on any operating system. I've only got about 10 or 15 minutes left here in the presentation, so I want to be sure and get to our this concept of a network, which is I think a hot topic right now, because we do need to share resources and get together. And so I wanted to talk about news at our station. So from the beginning, I wanted some kind of news programming. Coming from the NPR background, I think a combination of entertaining music, new music content, and information is crucial. It shouldn't just be crazy DJs doing their weird music shows all the time. So I kind of reserved a block 4 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday that's just news. And that's curated by the station staff and input from the board of directors, which I solicit.
Local news, right? Or
well, at first, no. At first, we aired Democracy Now! Every day at 4 p.m. And then that was followed by a variety of programs. Reveal News is a really good one. Alternative Radio is another one. various other programs. And then we, I wanted something a little more consistent. So it was Democracy Now! Followed by Native America Calling. Native America Calling, I think, is one of the best programs being produced right now. If you've ever listened to NPR, you've heard Antonia Gonzalez, National Native News. That's a 5-minute segment within Native America Calling. The rest of the program is great and typically is not aired on NPR stations. No, it's Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Native Voice One.
Native Voice One, Kiwanik Broadcast Corporation out of Alaska. Mm-hmm. And so they cover a lot of issues that are important not only to Natives but marginalized groups in general. And the host is this lady, Tara Gatewood. And she just has the most calming, soothing demeanor. And the conversations are always civil. The discourse is always deep and intelligent. And sometimes they cover esoteric issues that are specific to reservations. But like I say, for the most part, you know, it's a national call-in show. So I think she's way better than Neil Conan. She's better than Terry Gross. She's definitely better than Amy Goodman.
Wow.
So
wow.
Tara Gatewood is incredible. So
it's
no, it's not. It's $250 a year if you're an LPFM.
Wow.
So, you know, typically you could go to a supporter of your station and say, hey, we need $250. Would you sponsor this program? Yeah, so that's what we did. And so Native America Calling, Tara Gatewood has this, you know, like I say, this really calm demeanor. How does that make you feel? it's not as hard-hitting, left-leaning as Amy Goodman is, and I for one, prefer that. Because in our community of Butte, it is an Irish, Catholic, Democrat, labor union town, but not everyone identifies with that political sphere. So Democracy Now! On our station, I think especially after the election, really became a divisive program. And so people that would otherwise tune into our station would probably turn it off when Democracy Now! Was on. And Amy Goodman, I found the quality of her journalism to really be declining. Again, this is just my own personal perspective, but she would ask questions like, I remember she had a community organizer from Chicago on there, and this one just stuck out with me. She asked this question, if our federal government wasn't spending billions of dollars on foreign wars, would you be able to use that money in your community?
Oh, my God.
What are you talking about? Yeah, yeah. I just found questions like that and discourse like that to be more and more common. The final straw for me was when this lady, I've talked to a couple of you about this, but Marcy Wheeler from Empty Wheel, it's a blog, was on the show, and she was talking about this guy, Ed Batofsky, who she describes as a Republican operative. And she, I would call him a rat fucker. Huh. That's what she said on the air, and it went over the air at our station, and I don't know how many other stations it went over the air at, but I emailed their producer and said, what are you going to do about this? You know, what happened here? And there was no response, and no response, and so I just fucking canceled that
show. What show was that?
This is Democracy Now! Yeah, Marcy Wheeler called Ed Batofsky a rat fucker. And then
they didn't bleep it or anything?
No, they didn't bleep it. Right. And later it was bleeped on their website, but it wasn't bleeped during the live broadcast. So that really pissed me off. And again, it jeopardizes the resource. So Mama Bear came out and I canceled the show. You know? So, but Democracy Now! Is a really great thing because it's 59 minutes long every single time. It's basically free. We pay $250 a year, just like Native American Calling. And their producers helped us out during the pledge drive. I demoed some of that in the talk yesterday. And it's really great, you know, as a station manager or program director, to have news content that you can always rely on being there. It's posted at the same time, the same website, every day. It's always 59 minutes. There's always music breaks for underwriters. That kind of reliability is really critical, I think. And that's the main appeal of that show. It's just a shame that the content is so vitriolic now. So basically getting rid of that program compelled us to develop our own news. And I don't think we ever would have taken that step as an LPFM unless we had gotten rid of Democracy Now! So I'm grateful to them in that way because it compelled us to develop our own thing. And so now we do a one-hour news program on Mondays, one day a week, and it's a huge challenge. Making news about your community, I think, is really important. It's also really time-consuming. So for a one-hour program, we'll typically spend 10 hours throughout the course of the week recording interviews and editing news pieces, and that's where that literacy comes in with Adobe Audition or other production platforms. The more you can arm your volunteers with knowledge about how to produce and edit audio, the more relevant I think your station will become automatically in your community, because those people will, like the other day I was walking to the conference here and there was a strike out in front of the Hilton, and I thought, fuck, I gotta break my recorder out, and I didn't have it on me, but that's a news story right there. Yeah. That, you know, you just basically go interview them, call the Hilton manager on the phone and record that. and chop it together with a little narration, try to be as objective as possible, and then put it on the air, and then put it on your website. And so that, to me, when we talk about this idea of a network where we're somehow our stations are collaborating, it's little news departments sharing stories that are of regional significance, national significance. The folks I was visiting with last night from West Virginia, they deal with very similar water issues that we do in Butte. I mean, poison water, poisoned by industry, I think is probably a trope we can all identify with.
Yeah.
And so I would love to develop series about that and share that content.
So is there a network for these groups like you to talk to each other?
Well, I guess that's this conference.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
There's no website, though.
No, nothing in particular. Is this fucker going to, what do you think? No, it's dead. We might have killed.
It's coming on, but it doesn't want to do anything.
Okay.
And then it shuts off.
We might have killed the projector, so I was hoping to.
Mine.
Sorry.
I think it's mine and it's brand new.
Oh, damn it.
So that's
is there a fan switch?
It's probably some default setting.
I think it's
this
mine.
That's the one I use.
This is a Matrium property.
Right. No, that's not mine.
Okay.
I think it's
fine. No need. No need. It's not a huge deal.
Moisture on the lens.
Moisture on the lens?
When it was heating up, I could see paper. I think it's wet.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty humid in here, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so just my final thing is about that idea of partnerships. I hope this has been helpful. I feel like I've just been fucking tooting my own horn or whatever. So, but I'm
good horn, though.
Well, I'm really proud of what we've done, and I want to help other people do it. And I have PDFs I can send you, like training documentation, the buddy session checklists, all that kind of shit. You can tailor it to your own studio.
Do you record any of your training sessions, audio or video?
I have recorded one DJ training session. Yeah,
you can share something.
I'll send it to you.
I'll email you. If I want to get all that stuff.
Okay, very good. Yes. Yeah. And if you sign up on the list there, I can send out a blast, a zip file, and links to stuff on that list. So, the partnership thing. So, I've been kind of thinking about the region, and even less regional. I've been thinking about Montana. It's this enormous state. And the kind of radio landscape I laid out in the beginning, there's a lot of stations that have been on the air for a long time that have a lot of institutional knowledge right in our neighborhood in Montana. So I guess I'm first focused on organizing Montana. We call it the CRN of Montana, Community Radio Network. We have this little CRN logo. And so that's where I've been kind of thinking. And so we had this very bizarre experience that I want to share with you that really opened my eyes up to the possibility of international partnerships. So if the projector was working, I'd show you a video to conclude the presentation. But we got an email one day from this guy named Sibanye-Iso Zulu, who claimed that he was a Zulu prince from the Zulu kingdom in Nongoma, South Africa, and they had formed this community radio station called Nongoma FM 88.3. We play, you listen. And it was pretty cool. And so we got this, our music director, Dark, that he's a kind of a gadfly. He's hilarious. He's a comedian. Anyway, he's the guy in the beginning that I said wrote that article in the arts publication that pissed off all the commercial people in town. He got this email from Sibo, and he said, okay, I've seen this before. You know, I'm a Zulu prince. Can I have your credit card number? Type of shit. And so he started emailing back with this guy and saying, oh, yes, we would love to form this radio partnership. We thought, okay, this is a new one, the radio scam. What the fuck is this? I don't know where this is going. And so we thought for sure it was a scam. And so he ended up emailing back and forth with him and was saying, oh, we'd love to develop this partnership. And yes, we could travel to South Africa, but we must come with a live elk. And all this crazy nonsense, you know. And he was just joking around with him. But Sibo kept putting up with it and kept putting up with it and was just totally professional and serious as a heart attack. And so he ended up finally, he said, okay, me and Dark do a radio program where we blab about all kinds of stuff and late at night. And so Sibo said, why don't we put the Clark and Dark show on the air live in Nongoma? And we were like, okay. And we still thought, what's this guy's angle? This has got to be some kind of scam. And anyway, about 5 minutes before we went live in South Africa, we realized this guy is real and this station is real. And so then we were broadcasting to all these bewildered Zulus. Their station is like 70% English, or 70% Zulu. Isi Zulu is the language, and then 30% English. And so Clark and Dark were on the air there, and we started doing that week after week after week. And then I wrote this letter so that Sibo could get a visa to come over to the United States. And anyway, Sbo Zulu and Kokelo Imsomi and Mokai Malope are these three guys that came to Butte this summer, and they stayed for 90 days.
And 90 days?
They stayed 3 months in Butte, and they had a regular program on the air. Every Monday and Tuesday at 4 p.m., they would do a show called Let's Talk Butte. And because they were curious about Butte, and so the lieutenant governor, who's from Butte, came on the show. The director of the Natural Resources Damage Program came on there. An EPA representative came on. All these people came to talk on the air about Butte with these Zulu guys, and I found them to be the most passionate advocates for community radio I've ever met. These guys are absolutely amazing and so forward-thinking. And so they are thinking not only about their regional partnership; they just went international right away. So to me, that really is where we need to kind of focus our attention, is internet. Let's not limit it to our regions or to just the United States. We should go international. Sabo had famously now said that first America, then Europe, then Asia. And so anyway.
Next up is Mars.
Right, then we go interplanetary. So we hope to go to Nongoma. We have grants pending to try and pay our way down there, but I know that those guys would love to come to one of these conferences. I think they would be very popular because they're very good speakers, and the most hard-hitting anti-colonial rhetoric I've ever heard, came from these guys on our station. And our town is predominantly white, so I think a lot of people in town were kind of like, what the hell is going on? Because they're talking about the Boer Wars, and they're just amazing people, though. But they're out there, Nongoma FM. It's worth looking up. And I'll conclude by saying that whatever comes of these network partnerships, my friend Dark has phrased it in terms of this Chris Hedges term, parallel institutions. I don't think that it's necessarily productive to be fighting the man all the time. We don't want to be defined by our opposition to existing institutions. So we should build a parallel institution. And just basically, rather than saying, you must stop oppressing us, we can just say, we'll take it from here. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Can I get your email right now? Because
sure.
I would love to have that's all the things. I'm the station manager of a radio here. Not here, WFMP,
right.
Louisville.
Okay.
And I just need more stuff, more literature.
You bet. So I'll just send you an email right now. About
cool.
That.
And I'll follow up with you to see things, just see what I can do.
Okay.
All right, so my email address is R as in Robin.
Okay, R.
V as in Victor. And then it's F R E D E R.
Okay.
I C K. No,
okay.
11 at gmail.com.
I won't be able to go tomorrow, but can you go to this?
Mine is R. Washington.
And you have a
R C C B.
Paul Smart.
Okay.
At AOL.com.
Paul Smart.
Yeah.
Okay. PAULSMART.
Yeah.
Okay. At AOL.com. I'm going to say hello and then I'll follow up by sending you a training document.
Okay, great. I'll like to write the book at
gmail.com. We might drive across Montana later this year.
Stop in?
Here we'll stop in. Okay. The last time I came, we were coming from the west on 90. I don't know how far out of here. Beyond Anaconda, we saw a giant billboard for the technical company. There was this whole thing about, family-friendly fun, and then at the bottom it said, have a ball. That was my last memory of that area.
Boy, that's like a drunken orgy at the testicle festival. I wouldn't call it family-friendly.
I used to live in Bisbee, Arizona.
Okay.
Got a station on the air there 12 years ago.
Okay.
Had the same kind of problems, not on the same scale, but big scale compared to small towns. Bisbee, 6,000 people
as far as mining in that.
The big open pit.
The Lavender Pit was open in the 50s after 2,200 miles of tunnels under the town.
Okay.
And, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
But it was primarily over a period of decades consolidated in Phelps Dodge Corporation. And Phelps Dodge in 2007 was sold to Freeport
So McMenro, the Canadian mining company. McMarron, yeah.
Okay.
And in the early days, the smelter was right downtown at Bisbee. Bisbee built up a canyon, right? So for decades, Phelps Dodge did absolutely no remediation.
Okay.
As soon as Freeport closed down the deal, they offered soil testing to everyone. And over a period of years, and it was mostly on the east side of the canyon, most resorts. I had my yard tested, but they said, hey, you're cool. The other side of the canyon, most of those properties, they replace all the soil.
Oh, yeah.
And what the heck? And, you know, this is a town built of stairways.
Yeah.
So in a lot of cases, they were carrying 5 gallon buckets of stuff they excavated down.
Oh, sorry.
It comes through AudioCorp, but I'm also setting up a deliverable for people that aren't
okay. Right, I'm a producer with AudioCorp, but no, I can, you know, I can't download it, so I can upload it, I guess. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but because there is a podcast, but it's different in the sense that the one for terrestrial is 28 minutes exactly.
Okay, nice.
And the other one, it varies. Also, there's pitching in it, like, hey, become a member of the show. So we take that out for terrestrial.
Nice, okay. Okay.
But she's also, you know, TV as well.
Okay.
And then there's this one really short piece which I just started to put also up. It's called The F Word. Sometimes it's in the show, sometimes it's not. But it's a very sharp, just over 2-3 minute commentary.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, so I think it's a good thing to add in your one of your morning or evening. Or,
right.
Like she did this one with this right to, there's, you know, the right to repair laws.
Right to repair?
Yeah. So, like, Apple and a lot of these big companies are putting millions and millions of dollars to stop these laws that people are trying to pass, which is your right to actually repair.
Like John Deere. Their farming equipment is so specialized and computerized at this point that they have to have a technician that goes out on site, and if you as a farmer start to mess with your own shit, they can sue you.
Oh my God.
It's really, yeah.
Okay.
So that resonated with me when you were like with all these metals and all this stuff too. It's like, anyways, but right to repair.
Okay.
And then the other one right now is surveillance, but it really talks about surveillance, not like the man kind of thing.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
It's the. And then we've got another five to change the laws for what they're going to be capturing for social media.
Okay.
So,
is my camera on right now? You know,
yeah, just to get people, you know, aware. And she's sort of, I worked with Amy and like my second you're talking
okay.
about. Because to me, she kind of bored her sometimes. It's like, are you an activist? Are you a journalist?
I don't mean to malign her.
No, no. Are you an activist? Or are you a journalist?
Yeah.
And we all had, I mean, one time I was going to cover, because I said there's always going to be another side of the story, so I went to Israel to try to find whoever was opposed to Israeli policy,
yeah.
You know, and the U.S. being so such a partner and everything, and literally Amy said to me, she goes, when you're going to Palestine, you're going to, like, so aggressive, but at the same time, you know, the director of the station was like, this is great, you know, fine, start the other story.
Yes.
And then, but she can be very interesting.
Oh my God.
But Laura, her show is more solution based.
Okay, nice.
So
yeah.
Her idea, like your story about these cats in South Africa, is really interesting. She just did this whole report on Greece and then on Bolivia, but also how her story is there. And then we're struggling with the community, help each other with disasters coming on, and just kind of dialogue.
Jim seems like a good resource on that too, Ellinger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he seems to know what he's talking about.
Yeah. So, anyways, check that out.
I will.
But I'll send you tonight, some stuff. Yeah, she's speaking later today. Do you have a car? I don't
know. But I'm going to email you right now. Yeah, I'm going to email you.
Mine's here, but I do several shows. So this is just one of the shows I work on, which is with Laura. but also like, I know all the DJ stuff. So.
Okay, yeah. And you're at WBAI, right?
Yeah, okay, I do a 3-hour show. That's what I was going to suggest to you. You might want to.
Wow, that's great.
Just use Traktor or Scratch as a DJ program. It's really easy to use. And a lot of the WFMU folks are using it.
Traktor, yeah. Have you used Virtual DJ ever?
I love Virtual DJ, but I also like one that's just DJ Live. Do you know that program? It's free. And then there's like $30 for hire. Actually, that one's great. Because it actually looks like 2 1200 turntables.
Yeah, nice.
You know, so you like start and stop.
Okay.
And then, you know, if you're on an iPad or a phone, it's kind of fun. But then there's also, you can do it for wave view. So you can see the right movement of the lever. But there's all these cool hot cues.
Okay. Where you can make like ear.
Yeah, so there's like, yeah, there's one that's actually a Snoop Doggy Dog Package. And you literally, you hit it and it goes Snoop Doggy Dog.
That sounds
so,
fun.
Fun. So yeah. DJ-wise.
Right, okay.
Yeah. It's just a little funner to access your music library that way. And it gets people, more visual and fun instead of feeling like you're out of
luck. Yeah, sure. Or like a list on iTunes or something. Yeah, yeah.
That's what killed me, because I started as a vinyl DJ.
Okay.
And this whole digital thing is just such a... Because I love visual.
Right, yeah.
Like, I know that white record jacket is white. There's that coffee stand on the corner, and this is what it's going to give me. I know that.
I like the physical artifacts, for sure, yeah.
You're nice to...
Nice to meet you. Yeah. Thanks for being here. Yeah. Okay. Well, 2020. It is about gone. Yeah. Fuck. What's up, Dave?
I want your contact info.
Okay.
When she's
sounds good. I'll write it down.
She's ready. And I'll send you guys an email. My email, just so you'll know when you see it and you won't forget it, is monkeyboyridesagain@gmail.com.
Okay. Monkeyboyridesagain. Is this still recording? We're going to have to stop that.